Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Acosta. We want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Acosta this evening, please press star 3 at any time on your phone's keypad. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Jay Acosta.
Thank you, Hugh, and thank all those listeners who are there this evening listening to our and participating in our telephone town hall. This is something that we've tried to do over the course of the past couple of years to as a better way to reach constituents and try to address some of the concerns that are percolating throughout our district and things that are taking place here in Harrisburg, whether they be centered around state government or whether they be local issues, do the best we can to provide information about status of bills or the like, our budgets, but also have a conversation about things that we can and can't do to help folks along the lines of addressing some of their concerns. So, Hugh, it's always enjoyable to have this telephone town hall. This will be the first one. We'll probably do a couple more over the course of the rest of this year. Because of the election process and the limitations on having these type of telephone town halls, we've not had one for a couple of months, and I think it's important that, we continue to have this dialogue. We also will continue to have events that are taking place throughout the district. In fact, this week we're going to have an educational or an informational discussion with the Secretary of the Health, Department of Health, the Secretary of Health for Pennsylvania, Karen Murphy, and I will be sponsoring an education and prevention discussion on Lyme disease and the Zika virus. It'll take place at the Shenley Plaza Cafe and Visitor Center at 101 Panther Hollow Ride, Panther Hollow Road in the Oakland section or the Park section. Right up the road from Flagstaff Hill. That's Thursday, May 12th at 6:30 p.m., and Secretary Murphy will provide, for, like I said, for a conversation about Lyme disease, but also inform us about the whole situation with the Zika virus and individuals who are concerned about what's taking place, and given that we have a couple of confirmed diagnoses here in the Pittsburgh area, we thought it's an important conversation for folks to have and some dialogue and be able to get it directly from the Secretary of Health who's charged with, who's responsible for maintaining, you know, certainly addressing these issues. And Lyme disease has been an issue that has been around for a number of years here in Harrisburg. So we're ready to be able to do that. And Hugh, I don't know if you have any questions on the line yet, and happy to entertain any questions you might have to help get the conversation started.
Thanks, Jay. As folks are joining us online, I know there's a healthy number of folks who want to join you. We'll get them in the queue again. If you press star 3 on your phone's keypad at any point, if you have a question for Senator Acosta about any issue at all, you press star 3 on your phone's keypad. And, Senator, as we're having the folks join us here tonight, I know we're in a transition time now. We've gone through the governor presented his budget in February. We had the budget hearings after that. There's been an intervening election, and now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of discussion of the budget. What do you see as some of the issues that are going to come up, and how do you think the budget is positioned for this year?
Well, I think, Hugh, thank you, because that's a very good point. Now, we're beginning extensive conversations along the lines of the budget process, and more importantly, the meetings are taking place with myself and other leaders of the Senate and the House, along with the governor, to try to frame a budget conversation. We, some of the things that we have to, you know, governor did his budget proposal and has made recommendations with respect to increased investments in education, human services, job growth programs, and the like. And those are consistent with the priorities that a Senate Democratic leader and our caucus, we have laid out as our priorities as well. So we're going to continue to work to make those investments. The overriding issue is the amount of revenue that we have available to make these type of investments. For folks to appreciate where we're at, our budget this year, our state budget, our state general appropriation is about $30.2 billion, a little less than that at the end of the day once we do a supplemental. But that's where we start from. As we go forward for next year, just to maintain what we did this year, the cost is between $1.5 and $1.7 billion and new revenue that's needed to move forward. So where does that money need to go? It goes a couple of places. Certainly one area is related to our human service programs and the increased costs associated with health care. That's a major cost driver. As health care costs go up, given that we're an elderly state, our expenses on our side of the equation with respect to those human service programs consistently rise year in and year out. The second area certainly is the area of contracts, where we have agencies that have contracts that are now in place that we must honor those modest increases that are provided there for state workers across the board. You look at issues like our correction system. Our correction costs also have been going up. I think the number there is about $200 million. Pennsylvania is now engaged in the Medicaid expansion program under the Affordable Care Act. The increased costs are our share associated with that. This is the first year that we'll be required to participate in that come January of 17. That's a couple hundred million dollars that we have to now pay going forward. It's capped at a number over the course of the next several years. I think 5% now, then 1% for the next 5 years after that, maxing out at 90%. We'll be receiving 90% of those funds. But this is the first year we have to participate. And finally, our pension costs are part of that conversation as well. As we made major changes to the pension system in 2010, requires us to have a significant number of upfront payments. 16-17 will be the last year that we would have these large spikes in our pension costs, both at the state level, but also at the school district level as well. Then everything levels off going forward. But this is the last year of those series of spikes. So at the end of the day, when you add all those things up, it means that we have about $1.7 billion more, or 1.5 to 1.7, in additional cost that we have to incur. And that is before we put a single dollar in education or any money into human services or any money into job development programs. There's no other additional dollars. So that needs to be layered on top of that. Now, when you look at our revenue, I mentioned that we're about $30 billion in revenue. If you look at our growth, we anticipate our growth being about $900 million or so, 3% growth in that range, and we probably expect to end the year with about $100 million surplus. So that number, we're looking at about close to $1 billion in new revenue coming in. That still leaves us about $700 million short of where we need to be. That's referred to as the structural deficit that needs to be closed. And those are the conversations that we're going to have over the course of the next several weeks, how we resolve that structural deficit. And the second question is going to be, once we do that, what investments do we want to make in education, K to 12, pre-K, early learning, Head Start, those type of programs? What do we want to do with human service programs? And of importance to us, significant importance to us, our investments in the drug and alcohol programs in Pennsylvania. We've reduced our investments there. We need to go back and restore drug and alcohol dollars to our community so our community providers have the opportunity to provide the services that people want in the community. Same thing with our mental health providers. We've ratcheted back our mental health dollars, community dollars, which means the providers are not getting the resources they need. What do they end up doing? They cut hours because they have to. They close down. And at the end of the day, the problems that we deal with under that manifest themselves in different ways, whether they be in the community where there's increased activity, police activity, or emergency room situations where it costs folks a lot more money to be treated, and that's the entry point in the system, and that's been problematic. So that's where our priorities are going to be, Hugh, as we go forward. But those conversations that we have regular weekly meetings with the governor, when I say we, myself, Representative Dermody, who's the House leader, along with our Republican leadership, we have meetings every Monday morning with the governor, and we talk about next steps with respect to this process. And that stuff is already, those conversations have already started for several weeks now.
Okay, thank you, Senator Costa. Just as a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to lead off with Joseph from Carrick. Joe, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator Costa. My question concerns the recent passing of the 70-mile-per-hour speed limit in Pennsylvania. According to the newspaper, only a handful of roads qualify for this. Is it possible to expand this program to include other major roads in Pennsylvania?
I know that we've expanded it significantly, probably just last week or so, I think it was, or within the last 2 weeks, pretty expansive of the 70-mile-an-hour speed limit. There are a lot of factors that have to go into determining whether or not it's appropriate for a particular piece of highway. And those factors include the number of accidents and the terrain and the like. So both the Turnpike Commission as well as PennDOT have undertaken a very thoughtful, methodical approach to designating roads to be able to do 70 mile an hour, and I think that's an appropriate way to go. We need to look at what we did initially. The first roads that we did, we monitored the activity on those highways as well as the roads that were not at 70. Then we increased that group of roadways, and now we need to continue to look at the data that shows us the number of accidents and the like before we go to the next step. But it's an ongoing process, but I do think that we've just rolled out several hundreds and hundreds of miles along those lines.
Joe, thank you very much for your call. If you have a question for Senator Costa about the budget or the turnpike or speed limits, anything at all, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers right now. We're going to go to Marvin. Marvin, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hey, Senator Costa, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know, can you help small businesses? Specifically, I'm a small architectural firm, and as you know, there's a lot of development going on here in the East End, and specifically the Homewood Brushing area. And large developers or big developers such as SNA Homes and Oxford Development are out here developing things, but they don't have an opportunity for small businesses such as myself to participate. So I'm wondering, how can small businesses be a part of the development program?
That's a great question. I think that there has been a lot of very successful development, not only in East Liberty areas, but in Lawrenceville and other South Side and the like. The ways in which we engage small businesses to try to work with them, particularly in the area of technical support, that we can work with our Department of Community and Economic Development to try to help them be best positioned along those lines. We've also done things along the lines of doing certainly minority business ownership, participating along those lines, as well as now giving veterans opportunities, veterans-owned businesses a preference as well. Those are some of the ways in which we can do it. We certainly cannot dictate or determine or tell somebody, a developer, who they need to hire, because we're simply not allowed to do that. But what we can do is encourage them to have a component of their proposals be related to small businesses. I know in my experience as trustee at the Community College of Allegheny County, when we did the K. Leroy Irvis Science Center, we had a significant number of small businesses, an overwhelming number that participated, because we broke many of the contracts up into areas that allow for more participation from a variety of small businesses. But I think the question that how we get more small businesses into the mix is something I think we need to have a conversation with our local economic development experts, whether it be the URA for City of Pittsburgh, or be the Redevelopment Authority of Allegheny County, or it needs to be folks at the Commonwealth, the Department of Community Economic Development, to foster programs that allow for that to take place. We have to do that. I recognize that because, in my view, our small business community, whether it be architects, engineers, or whatever the case might be, to folks who are selling, you know, plywood and lumber in these projects, the idea needs to be that our small business community is the backbone of our economy. That's where our jobs are at, and when we make those investments along those lines, that's what happens. But that's what we have to work on. I'm not quite sure who, like Oxford or some of these other developers, who they select or who are part of their team when they make their bids and who they hire, but we got to encourage them to do more along those lines.
Marvin, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. I encourage you to do so. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers right now. We're going to go to Jim in Squirrel Hill. Jim, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Jay. This is the Jimmy D in Squirrel Hill. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing, buddy?
Good, good, good. You know, I've always said that if every state legislature in the state was capable of running something like this the way you do, that the state would be in much better shape. But you know, I've said that
very much.
I've said that before. But there's a couple things going on, and I want to let you know what was going on. There's the United Nations is putting together a paper proposing a paradigm shift in economic development called Habitat 3, and it's a group paper that's being written by people in the economic development community around the world. It's going to be delivered in Ecuador in October. I'm on the committee. I'll make the overview available to your office.
Great, thank you.
Absolutely. Now, some of my egghead friends and I are writing a book about economic development, somewhat similar to Laboratories of Democracy that was written by Osborne, and we're going to have two or three programs in it to, that could easily goose up our job creation figures in Pennsylvania. And, and I'm sure you're aware that we were 49th in job creation and have been 49th for 5 or 6 years. Actually, the last time we had one of these, I think you told me to call the Bureau of Labor Statistics to get the certified number on how many jobs were created in Pennsylvania. I, in fact, sent the deputy director an email, and I did not get an answer.
Well, let me do this, Jim. Let me take a look at that, because I think that's data that, you know, I'm going to figure out how to mine. I don't think it's there in that form, but allow me to track that information down for you and get it to you so we can go forward. So I think that's important. And you, but you're right, in terms of our strength as a job grower is not very strong. And I think that we have a lot of work to do along those lines, and we've gone from the top of the list to the bottom of the list, particularly in those states around us. And that's why we want to make investments in those proven programs that you know a lot about, and you've recommended some as well, that are proven job creators. Programs like the Ben Franklin program and other investments that we can make that allow us to grow jobs and to entice businesses to come here. Modest incentives to get people to come here and stay here. Other things to keep businesses here. Some of the tax credit programs that we have in Pennsylvania to spur economic development and spur research. Those are things that I think that we have to look at. Those are the type of things. Those are the things. And our knowledge of the people we have here. When you look at what's taking place in East Liberty, for example, with respect to Google and the folks who work that's being done with Uber, that will be taking place down in Hazelwood, and the East Liberty stuff I mentioned, and many parts of the city of Pittsburgh in particular, there's great research going on and great opportunities, but you got to be able to get folks to come here, particularly, or stay here, and we have a group of folks coming out of our universities that are very, very bright, some of the brightest and talented people that are in the area, and we got to make sure we keep them. So that's what we're working on. That's what you and I have talked about, and I know you've done white papers on that subject, and those are the type of things we need to continue to do.
Hey, Jim, thank you very much.
Thanks,
for your
Jim.
Question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, you press *3 on your phone's keypad.
I just want to go back to, I think it was Joe's question about the number of miles we've done. So this last round, we've added 800 highway miles to the 70-mile-an-hour speed limit requirement. And that leaves us at about 1,000, a little under 1,000 miles. We've got a few more to go, but I think at the end of the day, as I said earlier, we made a significant jump along those lines, and we have more work to do. And we can only do the state roads. We cannot necessarily do local, certainly municipal roads. Most of them are 35 and residential roads, of course. But there are a lot of county-owned roads, for example, that we're not able to go and make changes to. So, but I wanted to respond to Joe's question. We're about 1,000 miles now of our highways, and we've got some work to do yet beyond that.
Jim, thank you very much for your question. Joe, hope that answers your question. If a question for Senator Acosta, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, press *3. Senator, we're going to go to Jennifer in Point Breeze. Jennifer, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Hi, Senator Acosta. Thank you for doing this. I think this is a great thing that you
Thanks,
guys do.
Sir.
And my question is specifically about lower elementary education. I have two kids at the public Montessori school, the Magnet School in Friendship. And one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of years is the cutting of things like instrumental music for the lower grades, the Spanish classes, library, cuts in the arts, these really wonderful programs that we had. And we're lucky enough at this Montessori, because it's a public magnet, to have a pre-K. And I think, one of the indicators of success later in life and just happiness in general is exposure to things like, is pre-emergent literacy, arts, Spanish, learning languages. And I volunteer quite frequently in the schools doing Shakespeare, doing Spanish, doing all kinds of things. And I'm wondering if we, in the near future, can we expect these types of essential programs to come back? Where do we stand there? I mean, we're lucky in that we have free lunches now in the public schools, which is a wonderful thing, but I feel like we're cheating these kids because some of these other programs have been taken away.
Well, Jennifer, I can tell you, I agree. It's unfortunate that over the course of the past 4 or 5 years, we've seen a significant number of programs that have been dropped. in the areas that you talked about. You know, I serve as the chairperson of the Arts and Culture Caucus that we developed a few years back, and we see firsthand, particularly in the arts and culture community, things that have taken place there. It's unconscionable, in my view, and now we're asking families and parents to even throw more money into the conversation if they want their students to participate in any of these type of extracurricular activities. You know, the state's got to go back and make any investments that we've made in the past where we've made successful investments. To me, early learning dollars are the best dollars we can spend. I know we just made, the governor wanted to do $50 million last year. We were only able to get $25 million in the pre-K program. We tried to do $10 million in Head Start. We were only able to get five. We're fighting to replicate that, and we're going to have to fight to keep those dollars in there to continue to fund those programs. But we've got a long way to go. The short answer is that we, and the only way we can continue to reinvest those programs and restore some of those programs is by having the dollars being driven out to the school districts that have proven programs that work, like you talked about. And that's what we have to do. And it's going to require tough decisions to be made. We simply can't get on a path where we continue to manage decline in our schools by flat funding. And that's what we have to work towards. But that is our major issue. Major initiative is investments in education, beginning at the early learning stage all the way through higher ed. And I think we're going to continue to be able to do that. But it requires advocacy, and I'm happy to hear that you're participating along those lines. But that's going to be the challenge, because at the end of the day, if we don't do that, if we don't make investments in education, two things happen. Certainly when we disinvest in our schools, you know, the performance of our kids is not as great, and we don't lay the foundation that we need in the early years for them to be successful as they move forward. And by the way, when you talked about your investments in early learning as a predeterminer of what a lifestyle might be, some states look at their investments in early learning education to gauge their prison population 15, 18 years later. So it's critically important resources, and why we have to continue to do that. But what we're going to do is continue to push along those lines, and if we don't make those investments, we harm our families and our kids. Second piece is, if we don't make those investments, some schools don't have the luxury of the, who want to maintain some level of those programs, don't have the luxury of having the resources and the reserves to be able to do that. And I think the bottom line is you end up having increases in property taxes, and which those folks don't want to be able to do, and it creates a conflict between those folks who are paying property taxes and may or may not have kids in a school district, or I get there's a little bit of anxiety along those lines that that's not appropriate. So by us making the appropriate level of investments, we cover both of those issues, something we need to do, and at the end of the day, Pennsylvania is a winner when we do that, in my view.
Jennifer, thank you very much. For those that have joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Mildred, and Mildred has a question about swimming pools and the Zika virus. And, Senator, I know you have an issue or an event coming up with dealing with the Zika virus. Mildred, go ahead. You're live.
Okay. Hello, Senator Costa. I'm worried about this Zika virus. People go swimming in the summer, and there's a lot of water that turns to puddles around. Is there more danger if you're swimming?
I don't know the answer to the question about the level of danger, whatever the activity might be, swimming or whatever, and that's why we want to have planned this event Thursday evening at the Shenley Plaza Cafe at 6:30 on Thursday. We're going to have the Secretary of Health be there, who's going to answer all these questions. She's going to provide a presentation, particularly on the Zika issue, and hopefully be able to answer that question more directly. We all are concerned about the risk, particularly as we read to women who either are pregnant or who want to become pregnant in their soon, we have to be concerned about it. And I just think it's very important.
Well, not necessarily the women who are going to be pregnant, just ordinary women who are not at childbearing age. Does this virus, when it bites you, is it different from a regular mosquito? Would you feel it? Does it hurt? Is it painful?
I don't have a very specific answer, and I don't want to answer a question that I don't know the answer to, given I don't want folks to be alarmed because I may say something inappropriate. All I can say is that we share a concern. We thought it was appropriate and important to have an informational and educational meeting in the district, so our constituents will be able to learn more about it. If we're not in a position, if you're not able to come to it, I will work, get you an answer. We have your information. We can call you back with that very specific answer and maybe get, you know, get you the answer to the very specific question that you might have. So what we'll do is we'll take your name and information that we have, and we'll answer those questions, get those questions answered for you directly before Thursday.
Mildred, thank you very much. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Barry. Barry in Southside Slopes. Barry, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator Costa. I've known you quite a while, and my thought is one of the things that has irritated me for a long time is going from the south side all the way out to Carrick and Brentwood, and you see the inconsistencies of garbage pickup, and you see people dropping off their garbage, whether they're moving out of their apartment or people just have debris, and I was thinking how much of an advantage it would be for a lot of the people that live in this area to actually have the access to be able to dump something at times and do a dumpster program. I see these clubs doing a lot of cleanups, and it's awesome. But everybody can't do that. But there's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, especially in that trek of about 3 to 4 miles. And I just see that that would be an advantage of cleaning up the neighborhoods, maybe where it's overlooked by, I don't want to say building inspection, but just by the people that can warrant the people that leave their houses collected up in the front.
Excuse me, Barry. No, I agree that I think that there's something that can be done. I know that, I believe that the city of Pittsburgh has a program that allows folks, if they need to have folks come pick up certain things, they'll be able to do that. You know, we try to help when we can with some of the cleanup programs in the neighborhoods and the communities. I know we just participated one in Bloomfield last week or 2 weeks ago. We try to help folks with things in their homes by doing the recycling or the shredding events that we do, that we try to do. But I think an overall cleanup project and dumpsters, I think that from time to time, neighborhood groups work with the city of Pittsburgh to be able to do that. And I would encourage this, and I will reach out to the city and try to encourage them to see when the next one might be in the Carrick area or the Mount Olive area, because I do agree that, you know, those are the type of things that we need to do.
Barry, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that question. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. We'll get you up and running as quickly as possible. Again, that's star 3 to ask Senator Costa a question. We're going to go to Russell in Squirrel Hill. Russell, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator Costa. My question is where do we stand with taxing the gas wells in Pennsylvania? Is there any likelihood that we could, because that seems like that would be an obvious source of revenue for the state?
That's a great question. That conversation has been ongoing for a number of years now. Last year, we pushed very, very hard to try to engage the Marcellus community and our colleagues in the Republican side of the aisle to participate and allow us to enact a Marcellus shale tax. We failed. They didn't want to do it. At this point, they still don't want to do it. The argument right now is that the industry is suffering significantly, that they're on the ropes, and that there are a lot of concerns about their ability to continue to function to the same degree that they have been for the last couple of years. We believe it needs to be part of the budget solution. The problem is going to be that the level of revenue, given the price of gas right now, the level of revenue we would generate from even what the governor proposed is far less than what it would have been early, that we thought it would have been 18 months ago or 17 months ago. So we're going to continue to pursue that. I think at the end of the day, I think it's in everyone's collective best interest for us to have some level of Marcellus shale tax, that we put a percentage on it, and we've been advocating for roughly a 5 to 5.5% extraction tax that today may only generate X, but as the price of gas goes up, natural gas increases, that it'll generate more resources for the Commonwealth. But, you know, the problem is the industries are they're shutting down wells. They're making decisions. Given the uncertainty here in Pennsylvania, making decisions to make their investments, their capital investments on the rigs and the like in other states because they have what they believe is better tax climate. and better, you know, transportation issues. So they're making decisions not to invest right now in Pennsylvania until we have some certainty and some clarity with respect to what our tax laws might be, what our regulations might be regarding Marcellus and the like. So I don't expect a major increase in the number of wells being drilled here, but I do think that by between now and maybe June 30th or the end of the summer, we may have a Marcellus Shale tax on the books, but not looking for it to generate a whole lot of money.
Russell, thank you very much for your call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Carol in Squirrel Hill. Carol, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. Thank you so much. I don't have a question, but I wanted to thank you for this opportunity to let us voice our questions and opinions. This is great. We don't even have to leave our homes.
Now,
it's wonderful.
Modern technology for us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. If you have a question again for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Marie. Marie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa. Hold on 1 second.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is great. I love this. I live here in the Bloomfield area. And what I'm noticing as I get older and my friends get older, no senior center, no senior high-rise anywhere in this area from down to Center Avenue till 40th Street. I notice Lawrenceville has two, Garfield has two, the veterans, they just built something for the veterans.
Right.
Is that anywhere in our future here in Bloomfield? I noticed, too, that the seniors had to leave. We had our building torn down. Some of them made it to the senior center in Lawrenceville, but I do know from just word of mouth, church, things like that, that the seniors here do not have anywhere to go. They don't even go down with access anymore. There is just a handful of them. And we still, I mean, Bloomfield is up and coming, and I love that. You know, we got all new people, like, you know, new restaurants, new everything, but we still have our seniors that we have to worry about.
I agree with you, and I think we have to find that right balance as our communities and neighborhoods develop and younger folks moving in. We have to respect the folks who have lived there for many, many years and provide them opportunities as well. With regard to your specific question about a senior center in Bloomfield, unfortunately what's taking place throughout the Pittsburgh, or I should say throughout in many of the county areas, I can't say with 100% certainty in the city, but I do know in the communities I represent outside the city, they're constricting the number of senior centers because of the level of folks who are participating. And I think that's become a challenge. As resources dry up, we don't make the same level of investments in the aging departments, and the counties that operate the senior centers in the city of Pittsburgh, who does it in the city, they're faced with fewer resources to try to do more, so they try to consolidate where they can. So anticipated growth of a senior center maybe in Bloomfield, I don't believe it's in the works. I don't know whether or not it'll be happening anytime soon. With respect to senior housing, like you made reference to, for example, I think it's on Penn and Matilda, the PHFA invested in low-income housing there for veterans, and that was a project that was done by Action Housing in conjunction with the federal tax program that I referenced. And well, those are the type of things we need to do to bring folks to the table who want to be able to do that. I know that, for example, other housing, you know, people apply for these type of programs throughout the state, and it's very, very competitive. I don't know if there's any Bloomfield applications that are pending that will be released in July or not, but I do know that there's definitely a need to have that conversation. Everything can't, you know, it would be great. It's great to have more development come in, and as we know, down by Center and Liberty, there's a major project there, and but I think that at the end of the day, everything can't be priced along those lines. We need to have the more opportunities for our seniors and other folks to come into the community and live, to be part of the community, to make it vibrant and as much of a diversified community as possible. So I think that's something we need to look at. I will reach out to folks at Action Housing. That's one group I've worked with on projects in Forest Hills and working with them in Squirrel Hill now and did the Bloomfield thing with them to see what likelihood there is out there for anything along the lines of Bloomfield. But I'm not aware of any type of housing, senior housing for Bloomfield right now.
Marie, thank you very much for your question. We have a question for Senator Acosta. You press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, as you know, we also take questions online. We're going to go to our first online question. Today is from Agnes. She asked, there are so many phone scams going around. What can we do to prevent identity theft?
Well, I would tell you that's another subject that we're going to be dealing with in the Pittsburgh area. We're going to have a public forum to have folks come. Folks from the banking industry are going to come and talk with us about how we can avoid these type of scams, banking scams in particular. But I think the bottom line is we have to continue to educate folks and have them be thoughtful when they answer the phone. Don't give out your credit card. Don't give out your address if you don't know the folks you're talking to. Be thoughtful along those lines. Those are the type of things we have. Be more secure with our credit cards and the like. So that's the best way to be, I think, that we can prevent it. But it's an ongoing, continual educational program. You know, we're doing things here at state law, at the state level, dealing with legislation to enhance penalties and make those folks who come here jump through hoops before they become relevant or appropriate in our state. But you have bad folks who are going to prey upon weak folks, and we have to make sure that we do the best we can to protect them.
Agnes, thank you very much for submitting that question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Merle in Squirrel Hill. Merle, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Merle Gottlieb. I have two questions. I wanted to ask you about what you're doing to support a strong, clean power plant and to move away from fossil fuels and transfer to renewable energy. And part of that also is how can we protect our history with our coal and steel communities and make them part of any kind of change to a more modern type of energy, that they should not be forgotten. That's my first. Okay. And then I had another question regarding education.
Okay, well, let me just try to address the first question. Your comments about the steel and coal industry, there are things that we can do to try to incentivize them to become part of our current updated conversation about how we develop energy in this Commonwealth. That's the only way to be able to do it. Many of these coal folks around the state are having troubles. They're closing down, as we know.
Right.
And there are a lot of communities that are suffering. I can tell you, more folks up in the coal country, other parts of the state, my colleagues who I work with, see the devastation that's taking place, very similar to what happened to us in the Pittsburgh region whenever we had a massive decline of the steel industry. So when I look to some of those areas like Johnstown, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, up in those areas, it's a major issue. And while they have certainly believed that we have to take steps to protect the environment, they also recognize, and I believe we have to strike the right balance to do what we can. So what am I doing along those lines? I mean, I've supported the things that Governor Wolf has talked about, and we'll continue to be able to support those things, along with Secretary Quigley, to help us move away from reliance along those lines of fossil fuels. Made investments in my days here along the lines of the investment, the Alternative Energy Program and plan that we put into place here in Pennsylvania. Strong supporter of the alternative energy methods, whether it be solar, whether it be aside from solar, it was the solar panels, it was the wind stuff, the incentives that we provided to those entities to be able to be a part of Pennsylvania's economy here. We'll continue to support those things. But at the end of the day, we have to figure out the right balance to be, if we want to preserve the history of the coal and steel, and make them change the way they do things, we have to provide them with the resources and support to be able to do that, because they are not able to do it on their own. It's simply not economically feasible for them. And we see what's going on in the steel industry right now with the flooding of the market with foreign steel, how it's killing U.S. steel and others. So we have to provide the right economic opportunity for them to convert what they do in the traditional fashion that they do it into a way that's cleaner and more environmentally friendly.
Right. So how do we do that when we're in a deficit
That's a great, that's exactly right. And I think one of the things that's going on is we have to make it a priority. And at this, up to this point, we don't have a legislature that places a sufficiently high enough priority on making those investments. In the last 4 years, we weren't willing to make investments and call upon people to help us make those investments. And
we have lobbyists that went into a room on their own and made rulings that would push things back over 2 years. So
well,
how do we?
I think the Supreme Court decision, right. I think, that has done that. Not, I don't know, you know, but the Supreme U.S. Supreme Court has done that, and that's impacted on our plan as well. So, but I do think at the end of the day, the investments that we have to make are investments that we have to make as taxpayers. If it's a we have to prioritize what we want in our Commonwealth. You know, as I stated, you know, the priorities that we have been investing in relate to education, relate to human service programs for quality of life for people. It's about growing and creating jobs. But along those lines is the making an investment in terms of how we want to preserve our environment. And I'm a strong believer that there's things we need to do going forward. Sometimes it's a difficult balance. You know, I would tell you, for example, there's legislation pending right now that may be addressed next week that deals with the cool power issue. And I think that, you know, you've got a major struggle between the workforce and labor and the environmental community.
Right, and there's we also have an obstructionist Congress in this state as well as nationally, so we have a problem.
You're exactly right. I don't disagree with you there. I think those are some of the issues.
Merle, you said you had a follow-up question as well?
I had another question about education. It's Merle.
Oh, sure.
And the question about education is, Republican candidates nationally are talking about repealing Common Core. Common Core is a lot of standardization and requires a lot of testing. So I understand the need to move away from so much testing. But the standardization part of making sure that every community has the facilities and the learning and the people and the technology and the know-how with the teachers and the school system, how would that be preserved if we were to lose Common Core? And also, would all the communities in Pennsylvania be able to sustain themselves if we do that, or are they going to go back to raising more taxes for education than we've already seen?
Well, I would say to you, I think that we, again, have to strike the right balance with respect to the level of testing and the resources that we provide to our school districts to be able to do that. There has to be some measure of some level of accountability, but we haven't figured out exactly across the Commonwealth or across the country how we do that. We work to delay the implementation of the Keystone exams, largely because of the issue that you've raised, that we were doing too much teaching to test. And the second thing is we weren't providing the resources to the school districts, not only providing the resources, but doing it in a fair and equitable way. Some districts have a lot more money to spend on their kids along those lines than other school districts. And that became a problem, and that's why we pushed hard to delay the implementation along those lines. What's taken place nationally, I think, is another conversation outside of what we're doing here in Pennsylvania. But I can tell you our chairperson, Senator Dinniman, is at the forefront of this conversation. The chairman of the Education Committee, Andy Dinniman, is at the forefront of this conversation, doing exactly what you talk about, how we strike the appropriate level, how we answer those questions that are so very, very important.
Merle, thank you very much for your question. We have a question for Senator Acosta. Press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to an issue that we just dealt with, and it's a very important issue and a historical issue here in the Commonwealth. This is a question from Rachel. Were you in support of the medical cannabis bill that passed, and where do you think we go from here?
Thank you very much, Rachel. The answer is yes. I think I voted for it 4 separate times over the course of the past 2 sessions. I was a strong advocate. Early on, I was questionable about it. I wasn't sure where it needed to be. In fact, when the issue first came out about 6-7 years ago, I was not a supporter, but it was the efforts of the advocates and the families and learning about the subject matter to much greater detail through a hearing process and reading literature that persuaded me to support it multiple times, and was very proud of what the General Assembly did, and particularly the Senate, because, as I mentioned, we passed it, I think, 2 times overwhelmingly before the House even considered it, House made some changes. We had to compromise a little bit, but it was a work of art that, at the end of the day, reflected a compromise on a very, very important issue that's going to provide a level of treatment for many folks who today suffer from conditions or diseases that that they believe this process would be beneficial for them. So I think that was important, supported it many times. Where do we go from here? I'm not in favor of recreational use of marijuana. We're not there yet. I don't think that, you know, the case cannot be made to me, at least at this point, as the case was made with respect to the medical use of medical marijuana. I think we have an industry that's going to be coming up over the course of the next several years, the medical marijuana. But I think Pennsylvania is a good ways away from passing legislation like Colorado or the state of Washington did.
Rachel, thank you very much for submitting the question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. And again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Lillian. Lillian, Point Breeze, go ahead, Lillian. You're with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. How are you?
I'm well, Lillian. How about yourself?
I am doing quite well, and again, appreciate all of the callers and all of their comments. This is in regard to the state budget. What is anticipated in terms of the state income tax or a state sales tax increase to address the deficit? Thank you so much.
It's a great question. That was part of the conversation that we dealt with all of last year and part of this year. My gut tells me that at the end of the day, there probably won't be a broad-based tax increase, a straight broad-based tax increase for sales, for PIT, personal income tax, or sales tax to generate the revenue needed to close the structural deficit and put us back in financial order. However, I will say to you that I think on the sales tax side, what you might see is that you may see some elimination of some of the exemptions that we currently have. Pennsylvania has one of the best sales tax in the country. We don't tax food and clothing and a whole host of other items. In fact, when you look at states that do have sales tax, we rank near the bottom of the things that we tax compared to other states. If you look at our surrounding state, the tax just about everything, in some instances even have a higher rate. There's no question that we have a revenue problem in Pennsylvania that we have to fix. I described that earlier in the call. Well, we're probably looking at possibly a shortfall of about $1 billion, $1.3 billion that we would need to close just to do what we did last year. So at the end of the day, we'll have to have that conversation. I will tell you that we will be looking to the area of taxes and cigarette tax area. We'll be looking to the Marcellus community. I think we'll be looking to other ways in which we can generate revenue that's outside of the scope of the sales tax or PIT increase. So I think folks can probably, at least as of right now. Now, I will say there's a conversation that may percolate at some point, it hasn't yet, that would look to increase the PIT or the sales tax to provide dollar-for-dollar offset of property tax relief. That's one of the things that we're looking to do. There's been discussions that we've been a part of from last year that would have tripled the amount of the property tax relief that every homeowner in Pittsburgh gets related to the gaming money. So if the city of Pittsburgh is at $250, we believe that we could increase that to about $750 in property tax relief. However, the dollar-for-dollar swap would come from an increase in the PIT or the sales tax. That's a conversation that may happen, but I think if anything you'll see along those lines for a straight PIT or sales tax increase, would be tied to a corresponding reduction in property tax relief. So it will be a dollar-for-dollar swap.
Lillian, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, from an online submitted question. And this deals with something where you just recently hosted a hearing in Pittsburgh. The question is from Jared. Heroin is ravaging cities all across the state and the country. What can the legislature do to combat the opioid crisis that is looming?
That's a great question. You know, first and foremost, I think we have an obligation to continue to have a dialogue and heighten the awareness of the problem. I think folks are aware of it, and we need to recognize that it's a problem that's been afflicting a lot of communities, and in some communities has been around for many, many years, and unfortunately we've not addressed it. But now it's at a point where it's becoming an epidemic, and we need to address it. So what can we do? We had a hearing a couple weeks ago that addressed the what we called the treatment the barriers to treatment, because what I learned from folks is that there are barriers to getting the proper level of treatment before folks get to a point where it's too late to do anything. So we have to break down those barriers and break through those entities that have been creating barriers to get the treatment, whether they be insurance companies, healthcare providers, or whatever the case may be. It's also a function of resources, being able to put resources into the community from the state to the county, to be able to make those investments in our drug and alcohol programs and mental illness programs, to provide opportunities for folks to get the type of treatment that they need. The next level of the things that we're working on is to expand the amount of treatment. We're going to be rolling out something next week that looks to the pharmaceutical community to be part of the solution, because I think they're part and parcel to the issue, whether it be just the opioid addiction that we see a lot of, but also the opioid addiction that leads to the tragic heroin overdoses that we hear so much about. And I think that needs to be something that's addressed. I know we had some challenges along those lines, but our caucus is taking this whole issue very seriously, and we're moving forward along those lines. We're also looking to be able to create a program through FEA, State Education Agency, Higher Education Assistance Agency, that potentially creates a loan forgiveness program that would allow for individuals who want to go school, who are in school or want to go in school and move their careers into counseling, addiction counseling and the like, that we provide a loan forgiveness program of some sort to encourage them to participate in that program, because our goal is to be able to provide more beds, more treatment, longer stays for individuals who need the help. Those are the type of things we're going to be doing. We're also going to be looking to drive more resources out to naloxone and make sure that more of our police departments have access. What we learned Thursday, I think it was last Thursday in Pittsburgh, when we had a hearing in Homewood with the governor and County Executive Fitzgerald, Mayor Peduto, Representative Ganey, Councilman Krause, and a lot of other community leaders, we learned that a couple of things. One, naloxone is going up in price, and communities, police departments are not able to afford it, and emergency responders, you know, it's stretching their budgets. The second thing is the number of police departments, even in our county, we heard from the Allegheny County Health Director, she indicated that not all the communities in the Allegheny County region are participating in that program, and we've got to do greater awareness and training along those lines. So there's a whole host of things we're trying to do to be able to get folks treatment and get them help. You know, throwing folks in jail to me is not the answer, and that's just not the way we have to deal with this issue. And so that's what our goal is going to be, and we're going to work hard. We're working very closely with Pennsylvania Secretary of Drug and Alcohol, Gary Tennis. We're working closely with Secretary Murphy, Human Service Secretary Ted Dallas. So we've got all the folks who are participating and all the players. We're just trying to figure out what we need to do. But at the end of the day, it's going to require us to make it a priority to pull the investments and pull the resources and make those investments in the community and into the neighborhoods and work with our policing agencies, work with our treatment providers. All those folks need to be part of what we're trying to do, because if we can't do that, if we don't do that, and we make a decision not to do that, the problem is going to get worse before it gets better. And that's just something that, to me, is unconscionable.
Hey, Jared, thank you very much for submitting that question. Senator, we're going to go to the callers. We're going to go to Amy in Oakland. Amy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes. I'm concerned about the House bill, which includes posting in God We Trust at schools. I'm concerned about the separation of church and state. And do you think the Senate will pass it?
I don't know if we're ever going to see it in the Senate. I know that it's a bill that's been introduced in the House. I do not believe that there's a companion bill in the Senate. I do believe that it would have a difficult time passing in the Senate if it got here. However, I would say that the dynamic of the Senate, the ideology of the Senate has changed over the course of the past 4 or 5 years, moving far more to the right. That could be problematic, but I share your concerns about that particular piece of legislation, and my hope is that we never see it in the Senate.
Amy, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to a submitted question, this one from Kerry. The question is, what do you think about all the money that is thrown into the campaigns for people running for election? I think Kerry's referring to you. I know you've been a leader on on a campaign finance reform.
And I think, you know, the problem with campaigns is, and the way the current Pennsylvania finance laws are, it creates more problems than it solves. It's a problem that needs to be addressed. I've been at the forefront of this conversation for about 6 years now. We cannot get our Republican colleagues to take our campaign finance reform package seriously. It just takes regular folks out of the process, and more importantly, it puts special interest in the process. And that's what's scary to me. Those are the steps that we have to take along the lines of trying to do that. There are a series of reforms that we're looking to do along with campaign finance reform that we have to have that conversation about. But we have to address Citizens Alliance. We have to address campaign finance reform in Pennsylvania. We have it in the city of Pittsburgh where we have limitations. We have limitations in Philadelphia. We have federal limitations. There's no reason why we in the state of Pennsylvania should not have campaign finance limits along those lines, because the system we have now just creates problems for folks, and it fosters illegal activity, in my mind, and it potentially fosters problems for folks who, for whatever reason, manipulate the process, and that's not good.
Thank you very much for the submitted question, Kerry. Senator, I know we're coming down the home stretch here. Do you have some concluding comments for the folks who have joined us here this evening?
Yeah, I want to thank everyone for participating in these conversations. I enjoy having them to get a chance to answer questions. If we've not gotten to your question, if you stay on the line, we will take your question and respond to it in writing to you to do the best we can. But it's a privilege for me to have the honor to serve folks in the 43rd District. I consider it an honor, and I enjoy my work, and I enjoy most of it. I enjoy having these type of conversations, whether they be through the online telephone town hall or whether they be in the personal town halls that we have or the meetings that we have, like the one we're going to have Thursday and the upcoming one on identity theft. So we want to stay engaged. We hope you do as well, and if there's anything we can do in our office to address any of the state issues that we've talked about or assist you in any way, please feel free to give us a call.
Thank you, Senator. And again, I want to go over a few things. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave the question for Senator Acosta, and they will get back. He and his staff will get back to you. If you have additional questions or concerns, you can reach Senator Acosta's office at 412-241-6690 or visit his website at www.senatoracosta.com. Also, just as a final reminder, I know we had a good question this evening about it, is that Senator Acosta and Department of Health Secretary Karen Murphy are hosting a meeting this Thursday, May 12th, at 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Schenley Plaza Cafe. It's 101 Panther Hollow Road in Pittsburgh. I hope you'll be able to join us for that important discussion concerning Lyme disease and Zika virus. Again, thank you for joining us this evening. It was a pleasant spending an evening with you.